Welcome to 10th Region Weekly on the Stay Hot Podcast. As always, Evan Dennison alongside. Tonight, we have special guest Coach Sean Ransom of the Red Hot Paris Greyhounds, who are winners of four straight, including two straight district wins this week over Bourbon County and Montgomery County. And as me and Evans talked about all year, that 40th district's a gauntlet anyhow, and Paris seems to be hitting their stride early on. And Coach, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you all. Thanks for having me.
Exactly, Coach Ransom. Great job you're doing with the Greyhounds this year, and just your first season really making waves with these guys. And I'll start. You guys started, I think it was 4-7 to start the year, 11 games in, and then boom, you've won 9 of 13 since. That's an impressive stretch for you all. So what changed, you think, in that time frame?
Well, I tell you what, man, we started off, our football team has a success. So, we didn't really get our football guys until pretty much December, or whatnot. It's kind of tough when you're starting out. Nobody really knows each other. We didn't get any summer basketball. I was a late hire, so I didn't get a chance to work with those guys. So really, they were kind of learning on the fly. I had a few guys that were nicked up, from the football season, so they came in with some injuries. Ja'Kari Ransom, he missed several games early. He had a high, and then the games that he did play, he was coming off a high ankle sprain. So, he's one of the catalysts, to what we have going on. Him along with Trey Morrell and Elijah Webb, those football guys, that come in, Caden Frederick, those football guys that come in and make an impact. So, I don't really think we really got on the same page until about Christmas time, or close to Christmas time. We were able to get away and, get some practices in, playing a few games. And I'll tell you what, man, I couldn't be prouder of these guys. They're learning on the fly, and I'm excited, man.
Yeah, that really looks like the time is when you did it. You guys went to Bath County and, won a couple games there at their Christmas tournament. And, that seems like you said, it's just kind of really when you guys took off.
Yeah, and that's why, I was trying to tell him, we made a little headway there. We ended up playing Frederick Douglass, in the championship game. And, of course, that's where I was coming from. I was at Frederick Douglass there. So I just kept, trying to instill into the guys, some of the hard work and dedication and things that, that we've been doing while I've been a head coach or assistant coach in the 11th region. That's kind of like a gauntlet, itself, in high school basketball. So, once we kind of got on the same page and we hit our stride, sky's the limit for this team. It really is.
And when you got a point guard like Malachi Ashford, I'm sure that helps make things a little bit easier for you. He's still a baby, man. I mean, he's in his freshman year now. And how much has he really impressed you with just, his youth? I mean, he's obviously been experienced with being thrown in the fire pretty much last year and whatnot. But how much has he really kind of made his strides this year and really impressed you with his progression?
Well, I tell you what, man, Malachi, like he's our quarterback. He gets everything going for us. I've known Malachi pretty much his whole life. I mean, we're family, whatnot. So I've kind of seen him grow up, over the years. He was able to get out there on the floor, and get some experience as a 7th grader and an 8th grader, whatnot. So, yes, he is a true freshman, but he's seasoned, and he plays on the AAU circuit. He plays at a high level there, so he's used to the competition, man. And I tell you what, he's a pleasure to have. He's a great student, in the classroom, and he brings that to the floor, man. And I tell you what, he's gonna be a good one. He really is.
Absolutely. And this kind of relates to both you guys. You guys have both been on both sides of the girls and boys. PK's obviously now over with the girls, but you've made the transition over from the girls to the boys. And this is something I've asked PK in the past before, but what's been the biggest difference, being the head coach of those programs from the girls to the boys or vice versa?
Well, like I tell anywhere, basketball is basketball, whatever what level, I don't care if it's girls basketball, boys basketball, whatnot. The main thing to me, is the pace of the game. Is a little faster, maybe a little bit more athletic, or whatnot. But as far as, the transition, I feel like it was pretty smooth. Of course, I was a boys assistant coach, for 13 years. you know, before I even got a chance to be a head coach. And my first head coaching job was Bryan Station. And, you know, I was the girls coach there, man. And I tell you, you know, Bryan Station had some great athletes coming in, you know, and whatnot. So, I mean, as far as the transition, to me, I don't really think it was a big transition for me because I've had the experience, you know, being on the back burner, you know, so far in my career. So, you know, I enjoy both sides. You know, it was always my dream to be a boys head coach. And then I got the opportunity, you know, to come home, you know, to Paris where I played and where I graduated from. And to me, it was a no brainer, you know, to come home and to give it a shot. You know, a lot of people shied away from the job. You know, they felt like Paris was in the cellar, you know, as far as not only in the region, but in the state, you know. And I enjoy a challenge. It's kind of like the same challenge that I took when I took over the girls basketball job at Bryan Station. And tell you what, in 4 years there, I played in a couple region finals. You know, I had, you know, several girls play high level Division I basketball. So, you know, I look to do the same thing here at Paris, you know, come in and get these guys accustomed to winning ways, you know. And of course, everybody knows it starts at practice. You know, you set your bar high early. And you know, it's funny because I look at some of the guys, they look at me, you know, we're running sprints or we're doing different drills and I'm putting time on the clock and I know they can't make the time, you know what I mean? And they're looking at me like, coaches, is this possible? You know? And I'm like, hey, anything's possible, you know? So I'm putting stuff up there and I just got them believing, man. And you know, as a player or as a coach, anything that you do, once you got your message across and the people believe in what you're doing, I mean, they set their goal as high as yours, man. And these kids are working hard every single day. And I'm fortunate to be where I'm at. I'm a happy guy.
And Evan, real quick, let's not talk about Coach Ransom's days of coaching at Bryan Station. I had a chance to coach against him at the Bourbon County Christmas Tournament 1 year, and he 60-pieced me. So let's not talk about his days as Bryan Station head coach.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Coach. I mean, you got a great memory, man. You got a great memory.
I won't forget it. When you get 60-piece, Coach, you don't forget it.
Hey, Coach, it wasn't me, Coach. You know, it was the players. And I believe that was the year that, you know, that team ended up going all the way to the region final. And, you know, we ended up getting beat by Franklin County. You know, Franklin County beat us in the region final there. And Franklin County ended up playing state championship that year. So I had a pretty decent team.
Well, what happened to us, that's when I was at Robertson. And what happened to us was we scheduled kind of tough. That was my first year there. We had Kayla Sainer, who ended up transferring before the year to, I think, Boone County or somewhere in Northern Kentucky. And she averaged about 30 a game. So she transferred before I got there. So this team went from having a 30-point scorer to not having one. And it was just a struggle all year long because they were used to relying on her and never really had to, you know, do things on their own.
I mean, it's a big difference, man, especially when you got somebody that can score the ball at a high level. You know that as a coach. I mean, that makes your job that much easier. You know, a lot of people give coaches accolades and things like that, but, you know, players make the coach, man. You know, the coach, only thing the coach does, they go out, they put the system in place, you know, they lay the groundwork and things like that. But anybody will tell you, man, if you got great players, of course they make you look like you know what you're doing, you know.
I've always said great players make great coaches.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
100%. And you know, coming over from the 11th region, what's been the biggest adjustment or difference compared to playing in that region on the boys' side and now that you're seeing it here in the 10th region?
Well, you know, like I tell the guys, every day is a grind. You know what I mean? When you're playing in that 11th region, of course, you're playing teams that, you know, if they were in a 10th region, you know, they'll be at the top, pretty much at the top of the tier, you know, all the time. So, you know, the main thing with the 10th region with me is just kind of getting accustomed back to, you know, the teams that are in the 10th. You know, every now and when you're in the 11th, you really don't get a chance to see a lot of teams outside your region, you know, or whatnot. So we were familiar with Clark County. Of course, we played the GRCs, you know, and things like that. And to me, you know, it's just a matter of getting back to your roots and just getting the personnel down and just getting accustomed to, you know, different teams have different styles, you know, 11th region, you know, it's more what I would say up and down pace, We got a lot of teams. That have players that end up going and playing, going on and playing college basketball. Sometimes you're playing teams that may have three or four guys, on their roster, at the same time. So I just brought that mindset, to the 10th region. I said to myself, here I am. I'm used to playing your Henry Clays and your Tate Creeks and your Madison Centrals, on a nightly basis. So if I can just prepare like I'm preparing for those guys every single night, when we're going up here, to take nothing away from anybody that we're playing. But if I can prepare to play like we're playing those guys on a nightly basis, I feel like, we should be ready to go out and play and compete with anybody.
Yeah. And you guys go from the outhouse to the penthouse in a matter of 2 days. You were sitting at 0-4 in district play. Now you're at 2-4. I imagine you're probably a Montgomery County fan when they take on Bourbon County when that matchup comes. So you avoid the 1-4 matchup with GRC. But how big were those two wins on Friday and Saturday? First beating Montgomery by 15 on Friday, and then another grinder with Bourbon County on Saturday.
Well, those two wins were huge, whatnot, and it's just well, those two losses, to Montgomery County and Bourbon County, they were early losses, mm-hmm. whatnot. So like they didn't really see what we really had, whatnot. So like I told the guys as we prepare, we're going back out, we're playing these people a second time, like they don't really know what hit them. You know what I mean? So we come out and, we've done different things. Some of our sets have changed, of course. Now you got personnel that you can actually run certain things with. You switch up what you do, whatnot. So, like I say, my squad, I love my squad. As far as, the district wins, I feel like with the squad that I have, I feel like with the exception of, GRC, GRC, they're coming out there to defend the state champions. So, they can beat anybody on any given night. But other than that, as far as the region goes, I like my chances, man. I tell them, if we can sneak in this back door, like you said, we got an opportunity to come out the front. And those two wins, that set us up pretty much. If Montgomery County can take care of business and beat Bourbon County, then we're a lock not to be able to, get that 4 seed. But if Bourbon County was to able to beat Montgomery, now we got a 3-way tie, for that second, third, and fourth spot. And it pretty much comes down to, I guess it's a coin toss is how they do it, in this district. I don't know if it's coin toss, point spread, or whatever, but I'm a Montgomery County fan right now, for sure.
Absolutely. And, just the battles you've had with Bourbon, those two games seem like they've been a lot of fun. Obviously being on the wrong end the first time around, but, the second time around you get them. But just speak about that experience. And then, also the All-A, being able to host that in front of those large crowds that I saw, that seemed like really cool experiences and, what high school basketball is all about.
Yeah. Well, Bourbon County, a crosstown rival. You know what I mean? Saint two schools, one city. I got one of my best friends and Coach Derek Robinson. He coaches the Bourbon County. Me and Derek were actually on the same staff at Bryan Station, high school, a couple of years ago with Nimbo Hammonds, and those guys. So growing up, being around Derek, he's been an asset not only to myself, but to the community as a whole with his basketball experience, and career and whatnot. I watched him play in college, we would travel, to Bowling Green to watch him play several times. I was fortunate enough, to travel with them. We went to New Orleans when they played in the NCAA tournament, when he was there. I believe they played Florida down there in New Orleans when we went. So, as far as the Paris Bourbon County rivalry, I played in several games, as well. And it's a special meaning, it's a special meaning to me. We felt like they snuck away. They snuck away with one the first time that we played them. They hit a running double pump, 25, 30 footer, it was a great shot, and it was the only shot the kid shot all night, what, it was their night. It was meant to be, So it kind of left a bad taste in our mouth. So, I always tell our guys, here's our chance to get our lick back. It's kind of like tag, somebody tags you, then guess what? Now it's your turn, to get out there and to try to do the same thing. So we were excited, about the opportunity to, to come back the second time and redeem myself. And with the Class A tournament, you know, it was kind of like the same thing. You know, I'm a big believer in motivation. You know what I mean? So I played. It was a thing that everybody says we couldn't beat Augusta. You know what I mean? Coach Henson, we became pretty good. We became pretty good friends, you know, over the last several months. He's a great guy, you know, whatnot. And he's been doing great things with his program there. So that was definitely a huge test, you know, coming out, especially, you know, when they picked us to win 3-4 games on the whole year, you know, as far as this year. So, you know, I tell them, in order to beat the best, you got to beat the best. And that was an opportunity for us to come out and show that, you know. We were fortunate enough to get by Augusta in a tough game. And then we go and we play the Reed brothers, you know, from Bracken County, you know, and we had a little excerpt that we played, you know, from that Coach Reed played, you know, he was on a show, I guess sometime throughout the season. And he pretty much said it was a lock for them in the, to win the Class A, you know what I mean? And he didn't really see anybody, you know, accustomed to doing those types of things. And I kept telling my guys, I felt like I had the best backcourt in this region, you know, as far as Class A goes, especially. So it was our chance, you know, to try to make our mark. So our two guys, they showed up and we went toe to toe, you know what I mean? Kind of like a Foreman and kind of like a Foreman Ali. And we were able to come out on top, man. And going into the Bishop Rossi game, I mean, our spirits were high. I felt like we kind of left that one on the table, you know, whatnot. But I mean, as far as experience goes, you know, you're able to play several games and several nights and get the experience that you need, as far as you're going to need this time around, you know, this time of year here in February. And you always want to be a February team. I tell them I want to be a February, March team. And hopefully we can keep continuing doing what we're doing, man, and have a little luck on our side as well.
Yeah, you guys are definitely trending that way. And you've been doing this a while. That's no secret and something that you've told us here throughout the show. But what's been the biggest change you've seen in the high school basketball game over the years, maybe just even the past 10 or 15 years? What's been one thing or a couple things that you've seen really stick out and be like, wow, I don't remember seeing this, you know, back when I maybe first started or whatnot?
As far as change goes, you know, I don't really foresee it as that, you know. My main thing is just the way the game's evolved, you know, with the 3-point shot, you know, and things like that. I just felt like when I was coming up, when I was playing, you know, or just throughout my travels, the 3-point shot really wasn't relied on, you know, as much as it is today. Like nowadays, the 3-point shot is pretty much kind of like a layup. You know what I mean? You get kids coming out there and, you know, the first thing they do is they try to step on that stripe, you know, and to show their range. And then, of course, I know watching guys like Steph Curry, you know, or different type of things that go on throughout the basketball world, you know, if they kind of made it a custom, you know, to incorporate those types of things, you know, into the game. I'll tell you one thing that I really would like to see is the shot clock. You know what I mean? As far as high school basketball goes, I feel like the shot clock would really be detrimental as far as, you know, the evolution of the guys or the girls when they get ready to go to college, you know, whatnot. You got the shot clock there, so that speeds the pace of the game, you know, and things up. So as far as any types of changes, the 3-point shot, I feel like it's really been one of those things. And then, you know, you got guys now, man, they're playing high above the rim. You know what I mean? Like the athleticism, you got guys with 40 and 45 inch verticals, you know, and things like that. So see a lot of coaches, you know, running backside lob plays and different types of things to use their athleticism, you know, to the best of their ability.
And you mentioned, you know, Malachi, and, you know, I think we all know the backcourt, Malachi and Jakari. What other guys? You mentioned a few football guys to start, but maybe some other guys that have really bought their roles in on your team. Because I mean, when you got two prolific guards like that, you got to have role players, guys that are there to set screens, guys that are there to be your defensive stoppers and whatnot. So tell me about some of these role players and what they've meant to your roster and how they're kind of evolving and helping you guys evolve as well.
Well, you know, one of the main keys, Trey Morrell. You know, he's a senior here, wide receiver on the football team, you know, arguably, you know, 6'4", In that type of range. I call him Big Guard. You know what I mean? He always likes to try to get out there and handle the ball. I'm like, hey, man, you can't really be my big guard right now. I need you to get down there inside, and help rebounding and things like that. He actually had a game, one game to where I think he had maybe 19, 20 rebounds a couple of weeks ago, in that game there. I got guys like Zorian Alcorn. I got Christian Blackwell. Blackwell's another senior, that has came on strong. They really didn't get a lot of playing time, I guess, the last few years here at Paris. Alcorn, I'm familiar with him. Alcorn was in was at Frederick Douglass, for a while. He's plays high level AAU basketball. And then I've got Zaire Ray. And he's another guy, another guard that comes in that keeps kind of spearhead our defensive strategies, and things like that. I've got Marcus Gar, who just signed to go to Campbellsville to play soccer. He plays basketball, football, soccer at Paris High School. Very quick, very athletic, whatnot. And then my diamond in the rough, and I keep telling people, I got a kid named Caden Frederick. I'm telling you, he's the quarterback on the football team. He's a sophomore. He's probably our most athletic guy, but he just doesn't really have the confidence, that he needs to have right now. But yourself, experience is the best teacher, and that confidence is going to come from him, going through experience and things like that. He's moved into the starting lineup. He buys in. He comes to work hard every single day. And I tell you what, man, we're going to be tough. We're going to be tough.
Absolutely. Well, keep my guy Dr. Sports in check down there, and give Puckett a smack in the head for me too while you're at it. So
hey, both of those good guys, a lot of knowledge. Puck, I don't think it's a stat that he doesn't know.
Coach, before you go, I just wanna you did something earlier in the year that a lot of people probably didn't pay much attention to, but as a fellow coach, I know how tough and hard it is at times when you lose on those running double pump 3-point shots that the only shot the kid took all game. And, I know it means a little bit different because you and Derek are so close, but to go in the opposing team's locker room when it is your county rival and to speak to those kids and to congratulate the coach and the kids, that's a class act. And I just want to commend you for that, because to me, that's what high school basketball is about, is being willing to give credit where it's due and to congratulate these student athletes, whether you coach them or you coach against them, they still deserve our recognition. And I just want to say hats off to you.
And thanks a lot, man. Like I say, I'm about family. I believe in positive experiences and being a positive lifestyle, and things like that. I've also got some family members, that play on the Bourbon County side, or whatnot. So to me, man, it's all about showing love and spreading love. And like I tell my players and everyone that I come across, in order for you to receive a blessing, you got to be able to give one as well. So, going in there and doing those types of things, that's just me, and I didn't really, it was something that really wasn't even planned. It was like a spur of the moment type thing. They had to run, running jumper down the crowd, it's running on the floor. And, I could tell our kids were, they were a little down, and Bourbon County was excited. So I just told our kids, you all wait right here. I'm going over here. I'm going to congratulate these guys. I used to be a coach at Bourbon County. I coached high school football there. I coached boys basketball there, whatnot. So there's no ill will, as far as, the feelings toward Bourbon County. I mean, I actually interviewed for the Bourbon County job, over the summer. So as far as me to have any bad or negative thoughts about Bourbon County High School or the things that they're doing, I mean, that's not me. And that's any high school that I come across. Like, I'm a true believer in just positive vibes, positive experiences, and just putting a smile on people's faces every single day, man. So I love doing that. And not to say I wouldn't do it again, because I just feel like those things are a lost art, man. And I believe in shaking every kid's hand and looking them in the eye and patting them on the back and just telling them, great job, and just to keep up the good work, man.
Yeah, and I think that's why it hit me, because I try to do those things too. And, just as a coach, it just seems to me like those gestures are a lot easier to do when you win by one. Those of us that can do that when you lose by one, those are the ones that are special. And, Coach, you just said something that kind of gave me cold chills. In order to receive a blessing, you got to give a blessing, and that'll stick with me for a long time. So I appreciate that.
Yes, sir, Coach. I appreciate you all, man. I appreciate y'all having me on. And like I say, if there's ever anything I can do for you, please let me know. and I'll do the best I can for you as I would, you know, anybody else out there that I come across. I really appreciate the opportunity, man.
Always, Coach. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Coach Ranson. Thanks for going on.
Evan, that was probably one of the more enjoyable interviews that we've done on this podcast. And, you know, like I said, I've had the opportunity to coach against Coach Ransom, and I know what he brings on the sidelines. He's energetic, and the kids seem to feed off that energy. And when he says that they're going to be good, I believe everything he just said, because I know what kind of leader he is on the sidelines, and those Paris boys are in for a treat the next few years. And I'd say the 10th region better go ahead and be ready to get their game face on, because I know that when they face a Coach Ransom-led Paris Greyhound team, they're going to get all they got. So let's just stay in the 40th. And, you know, you mentioned earlier we talked about the district seedings, and Paris, you know, last episode, last week, I think we talked about how Paris, you know, 0-4, you know, they needed to win these two games this week to kind of change things up, and they did that. So now, you know, like Coach Ransom said, he's Montgomery County's biggest fan this week. So I also look for Montgomery to beat Bourbon County this week, and that'll put another matchup between Montgomery and Paris in that first round of the district tournament. So I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I think you circle February 10th on the calendar, and that's when those two are playing. And I don't know if I want to call it this, but it's almost as close to as an elimination game as you can get, you know, especially for Bourbon County. You know, they got to approach that as a must-win game, because they lose, then, you know, boom, they're looking at that 1-4 matchup with GRC. And based off season results, I think we kind of know how that one would turn out. So then if they win that, then we're looking at a three-way coin flip, or however they do it in that district. So, you know, that would make things really interesting. But, you know, I expect Montgomery to kind of rebound. They've lost, they've been on a rough stretch here. You know, they've lost, looks like 6 of 7, that lone win being over Menifee County. So, you know, they're struggling right now, but they've got, looks like Wolf County on Tuesday and then Bourbon County on Friday to kind of get things right and get.
Well, and Montgomery's going one direction and Bourbon's kind of going the other direction. Bourbon got right. A big win this week over Scott and Brossard. And we know that one of those two teams is going to be in the regional tournament. And, you know, Bourbon County's got a win over both of those two and this week. And, you know, but just like, you know, Derek Robinson, we, you know, we've talked about him before and, you know, what kind of job he's done at Bourbon County. But, you know, the one thing about him is he's a winner. You know, he's won at every level. He won at the high school level. He won at Western Kentucky. And as a coach, I don't expect anything different. And the thing about it was they went to Shelby County and got a big win, you know, last week. So mm-hmm. That's 3 of their 4 games with the only loss coming to a 2-point loss to Paris. So, you know, while Montgomery's trending one direction, it seems to be Bourbon and Paris are trending the other direction.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting way to see how that plays out for sure. Just the way that both teams are headed. Bourbon's almost back up to 500. Montgomery's falling down to 14-12. So
now, how strange would it be, and this is just pure speculation, but how strange would it be for Bourbon to beat Montgomery? There'd be a 3-way tie, and then Montgomery ends up getting the 4 seed. When they've been primarily the second seed all year long till the last week or so.
Yeah, you'd have to look at that as a disappointment for them, for how much, you know, kind of optimism a lot of people had surrounding them entering the season. They have dealt with some injuries. I know Dawson Gentry didn't play Saturday against Harrison County, so I don't know how long, you know, he'll be out or whatnot. But, you know, it's just a tale of them kind of trending the wrong way at the wrong time. So, they've got 2 weeks to get it right.
Yeah, and, you know, Montgomery County, you know, you've talked about how they've lost, what, 6 out of the last 7? Mm-hmm. But let's look at the team, you know, Round County, Fleming County, GRC, Eastern, Harrison County, Paris. That's a tough stretch for them, but by no stretch of the imagination should a team like Montgomery County, you know, lose 6 of 7 there. Hopefully, you know, they're healthy coming back into postseason play. I'd love nothing more for every team in the 10th region to be healthy come postseason. But It's that game on February 10th is probably the only game that matters right now on their schedule. You know, what they do at Wolf County on Tuesday doesn't mean a whole lot.
Right.
All right, let's go to the 39th. Mason County's been the hot topic in the 39th on the Stay Hot podcast, and rightfully so. They'd won, what, 13 in a row until they visited Connor, and Connor ends up beating them 80 to 61 on the road. But, you know, to some people, you know, specifically Mason County fans, you know, they may talk about how that loss, right, ever, whatever, but Connor's no slouch. You know, they beat Covecath earlier this year. They're also sitting at a, excuse me, Connor's also sitting at a 15-6 record. So, not saying that they should beat Mason County by 19 points or not, but they did, and you know, that's a good win for Connor.
Yeah, absolutely. With Mason County, I think it was a matter of them. I don't know. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit more on this. Winning 13 in a row, maybe they felt like they needed one, you know, in terms of a loss before the postseason hits. And I don't know if I buy
Well,
into all that, but sometimes kids get a little maybe overconfident and think, you know, maybe a little too highly of themselves where a loss, and especially a 19-point loss, you know, brings you down to reality a little bit and humbles you know, in a way.
I'm not going to say that a 19-point loss doesn't cause you to refocus, get back in the lab, and get back to work. But as a coach, I've never said that I wanted my team to lose one after winning 13 in a row or winning 23 in a row. You know, people that usually say that are the coaches that just lost a game. You know, it's good to lose one going into the postseason. Well, not if you win right, not if you win out. I mean,
Right.
you know, I remember when Kentucky back in '96 lost in the SEC tournament to Mississippi State, and everybody talked about, oh, they needed to lose one, they needed to lose one. I just don't buy into all that. It's just not me. If I can win 26 in a row, I want to win 26 in a row. And who's to say? Say you win 26 in a row, and we get beaten the first round of the regional tournament. We could have lost the game after 21-0 and still lost the first game of the regional tournament. So just because you lose one doesn't mean you're going to win out.
Yeah, no,
But
I'm 100% there with you, and you know, it's to me it looked like from about it was a 2-point game with about 3:30 or so to go on Friday night at Connor, and then you know, Connor went on a 14-2 run to end the quarter, and the rest was history there in the fourth. They have four really good senior heavy guards, and they only committed five turnovers that night. They neutralized Terrell Henry. He was in foul trouble and ended up getting held to, I think, 8 points. Riley Mastin had a pretty big night, but the rest couldn't kind of respond or answer the load there. So they still got a, you know, a few tough ones to go. They play at Brossard, it looks like. They picked up Woodford County, I believe, on Tuesday. Then they got Simon Kenton in Grant County. So it looks like they're going to have four really good tests going into the 39 district tournament. And to me, that's a really good thing for a team heading into postseason.
yeah, and Mason County, as we've talked about several times, they've been battle tested all year with the amount of games they've played on the road. I know they've played several teams that are ranked in the state. Lyon County, I know. I think they also played North Oldham. They've
Yep.
played Madison Central. I think they,
Flagstaff.
yeah, okay. So I definitely think their schedule's preparing them for a deep postseason run. But, you know, before the Connor game, they had a Walton Verona team come in, and I know I checked earlier in the year, and Walton Verona was averaging up over 80 points a game. And I think I made the comment here last week that I didn't see a team putting up 80 some on, you know, Mason County with their defense. But you know, kind of hats off to Walton Verona. They came into the field house and put up 75. So they're definitely a high scoring game, and I think they put up 99 on Bracken County. I think Walton Verona did. So they definitely can score the basketball. But
Yeah.
staying in the 39th, you got Augusta and Bracken County. You know, I think their draw was coming up this Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's either
Actually, I think
Wednesday or
it's Thursday, maybe
Thursday.
the ninth.
Yeah,
Thursday, yeah.
Thursday.
So we'll know a little bit more about it then. But you know, Augusta, they had lost four in a row before beating Calvary yesterday. And the four in a row losses, two of them were to their district opponents in Mason County and Bracken, and neither one of those games really close. Bracken, 80 to 88-60 after that being a 3-point game at the half. And Bracken goes on one of those runs that they're notorious for going on. And I think Blake Reed went crazy in the second half, hitting shots from Ohio. It seemed like he was so deep. But Augusta needs to get back on track. And I guess we'll find out tomorrow if they do that. They got Bishop Rosser coming to the Panthers' den. And that'll tell me a little bit more about Augusta and where their mindset is this close to the postseason. But I think they need to get back some momentum and chemistry. If they draw Mason or Bracken County in the first round, they're, you know, I think it's going to be an uphill battle.
Give me your what's your draw prediction?
Mason, Bracken, Augusta, St. Pat.
That's what you're predicting?
I'm a Panther, man. I'm an Augusta Panther. I'm going Augusta, St. Pat, and Mason,
I'm turning
Bracken.
All my notifications on, and on Thursday, if that happens.
What is it?
I'm turning all my notifications on, pulling up every burner, just checking Twitter all day if that happens.
Oh, you know it. You know Twitter's gonna go nuts if they draw each other. But
yeah, I think I'm with you though. Augusta's gotta get back on track here, and you know, in those four losses, and this is just me just observing from the outside and not seeing the actual game. But you know, lost by 12 to Harrison, 19 to Mason, 28 to Bracken, 21 to Scott. Like you know, you want to see maybe some tighter games there, just to say, all right, well, you know, they did lose, but they're there with these teams and they're competing, but. You know, in those four matchups, it looks like it got maybe rather lopsided. And, you know, like you said, the Bracken game was close, but, you know, it's a 32-minute game. You know, you got to play all four quarters, and it just seems like they're kind of struggling. And it seems like it starts on the defensive end, you know.
Well, and I was getting ready to say, in the four losses, it looks like they're only averaging about 56, 57 points, but they're giving up over 70.
Yeah.
You know? 88, 80, then you got 70 and 73. So they're probably giving up mid-70s and only scoring 60s.
Right.
Well, 60 at the most. I mean, but, you know, I've not had a chance to watch Augusta much in person. We play on a lot of the same nights, but I have seen several of their streams. And the defensive side of the ball is a struggle at times. But I've said this on the show before, and I'll say it again. When you give Coach Henson time to prepare for one opponent on one night, you're going to get Augusta's best. And Coach Henson is as good as coach as there is on motivating and preparing his team for that one game. So I'm not ready to count the Panthers out just yet, but I want to see some momentum here towards the last couple weeks of the season.
And come February 9th, the rest of those games don't matter. It's all basically preparation for that opponent you're going to be facing come February 20th or that week of. So,
right.
And then, you know, back to Bracken, you know, I did put them fifth in the region. I bumped them up in my rankings. But, you know, I thought they had turned the corner. They had won three in a row against Beachwood, Augusta, and Brossard. You know, three what I would consider quality wins. But then two setbacks on back-to-back nights, you know, at Walton Verona on Friday, and then lost in overtime to Franklin County on Saturday. So, you know, they're going to have three great tests to close out the season. They're playing at Lyon County, it looks like, on Saturday. And, you know, that one's going to hold something special because, you know, Travis Perry is going to be the all-time leading scorer, whether it be at the end of the season this year, depending how deep they go, or next year where he'll break, you know, Kelly King Coleman's record. And, you know, Blake Reed's probably going to finish number two once his career is all said and done. So, that's, you know, going to be a game of one of the best scorers in KHSAA history. And then they close out with Clark, with DRC and Madison Southern. So they're going to have
to. I saw something on Facebook from Coach Reed saying that game against Franklin County was their last home game, but it shows GRC come to Bracken County on the 14th. I wonder if that game's not being played, if maybe the venue's changed, are they going to Clark? Or are they just not playing it at all? I'm not aware of that, but he posted one on Facebook, I think Saturday before the Franklin County game, saying that was their last home game. So
yeah, they're both under their game limit. I mean, that would only be they got 26 games under the belt and three left. So,
and maybe I'm speaking out of turn here when I say this, but to me, that Franklin County loss at home is a bad loss. Franklin County's only got they're 10 and 12 right now. They're 2-9 in the region. Now, granted, I know the 11th region's a gauntlet. You know, like Coach Ransom talked about earlier, how every night you're battle tested. But I just felt like that game at home, you know, Bracken County, I was looking for them to pull that game out.
Yeah, one it looks like they let slip away. And I don't know, the rhyme or reason to it, but those are games where if they want to be considered among the elite, they got to pull those out. Looks like Blake went for 40 in that night, hit 15 of 26 shots, but everybody else was 14 of 42, so that's about a 33% clip. So
Well,
they
and I
did
think
get
we've
Scott
talked about this
Conlon
before.
back, and he's producing, but again, I think they're ready. They're getting close to turning the corner again, back to playing where they were at the beginning of the year, but then have two setbacks like that.
Well, and we talked about it before, with Bracken County, it seems like those games, like we specifically mentioned the Bracken Mason game in December, those games when Blake goes off for 45, 48, 40, whatever, seems like Bracken County has, struggled to win some of those games because of the production from the supporting cast. So, I would like to think anytime Blake goes off for 40 plus, your team has a chance to win. And they do. But Coach Reed's also one of those guys. And I think the one thing about Bracken County that's impressed me, and their record being what it is, if you look at their schedule, they're 15 and 11 right now, but they've played a gauntlet of a schedule. They've played a real tough schedule. They've played a lot of teams on the road. They've had some of them at home. And it's just, people's gonna look at their record this year and compare it to their record last year and say that, maybe they were down a little bit or they had a down season. But the step up and level of competition, to me, I feel like they're right where they are. Right where they're at now is right where they need to be. They still have a chance to turn that corner to make that postseason run that they did last year.
Get your popcorn ready for Thursday. So you said Mason, Bracken, Augusta, St. Pat.
Mason, Bracken, Augusta, St. Pat. And the only reason I'm doing it is I'm trying to speak it into existence. I know the Mason and Bracken County fans probably are going to shout obscenities at me through their phone or screen or however they choose to listen to the Stay Hot podcast. But deep down, I'm an alumni of the Augusta High School, and I want my Panthers to do well. Of course, I have family on that team, so I definitely want them to do well. But if you're one of those people right now, if you're one of those people who say, I want the best eight teams in the region, I think it would be Mason and Bracken going to the region. I think both of them are better than Augusta right now. But when they're the only district in our region that chooses to still draw, anything's possible.
I think we're due for a Mason, St. Pat, Augusta, Bracken.
And I think I said that originally.
That hasn't
The first
happened
time you
since.
asked me, I think we'll probably, I said, I think it'll probably go like it should. The 1 and 4 will be Mason, St. Pat. The 2 and 3 will be Bracken and Augusta.
Yeah, it's been since
But
2015 since that happened.
wow,
So
8 years.
8 years, and it seems like a lot lately. It's been Mason, Augusta. Which I think been 2 years in a row since that happened, and looks like three out of four out of five out of six. Yeah, I mean, I think 5 out of the last 7 years it's been Mason, Augusta, Bracken, St. Pat. So for as random as it is, that's not too random.
Well,
So.
that's what I was saying. So, just want to mention that St. Pat, and Coach Tony Moore, they have a really good opportunity. I think Monday, actually, yeah, tomorrow, at home they get Robertson County. Both of those two teams right there have a real good opportunity to get another win this season. So, I'll be keeping an eye on that game, the score, just because I want both of those, the kids on both of those teams to have the opportunity to experience success. And so,
Hey, someone's going to get a third win.
right. That's exactly right. Well, and speaking of Robertson County, that drops us over into the 38th district. Right now, like I think it's played out like we've expected. Harrison County's pretty well dominated the district. I think there's, six, are they 6-0 in district play, or no, they still got, they're 5-0. They come to
Hamilton
Pendleton
this
this
week.
week on Friday. Yeah, because we got boy girl doubleheader Friday with Harrison. So but
You guys do that for every district game?
every district game is a boy girl doubleheader. Yeah,
I love it. I think that's a great idea.
And Nicholas County and
you
us is
rotate
always.
Who plays first, right? Like boys.
Well, Nicholas County is the only one that the girls play last.
Hmm.
The other ones the girls play first. But Harrison County, 5-0, and I'm not so sure. Robertson County, or not Robertson, I'm sorry. Pendleton County's probably played them as close as anybody in district action. I think they beat Pendleton 61-51 a week or so ago at Harrison. And that game was actually single digits, I think, a couple minutes ago in the fourth. I think it was down to 8 or 9. But, you know, Harrison had gotten it up to 18 or so in the third, and Pendleton just kind of chip away, and finally got it down in the single digits. And, you know, Harrison County just made some free throws and bigger plays down the stretch to keep that double-digit lead. But
I feel like Harrison's quietly 21-4. They've won 9 in a row. I mean, of the four losses, it's Campbell County, Lexcath, GRC, and Marshall County. So,
and it's not fair, you know. You know my relationship with Coach Brooks. We're pretty tight, and it's probably not fair to Coach Brooks. But ever since they lost that game to Campbell County, and it wasn't even really close, it's kind of like everybody's kind of quit talking about them or haven't mentioned them in the upper echelon. And that's not really fair to him and his team, because they're, like you said, they're 21-4.
Yeah, and they've held firm at number four for me in the region. And
if you remember, I had them 3 all the way up until Campbell, and then of course they dropped to 4 for me. But they've solidified.
Yeah, I just think the only thing they're lacking is that elite win. You know, they have wins over Montgomery and Bracken, but you know, lost by 25 to Campbell, lost by 37 to Clark. So, are they ready to take on those top three teams? And you know, I think if anything, Terrence Brooks will have those guys ready come region tournament when that matchup happens.
I agree with that. And you know, the one thing about Coach Brooks, he also, as far as getting his team prepared, he'll have them ready. And you know, he's going to get a couple more games in the district. And if you base the district on what we've seen in the postseason, you know, he's going to have an opportunity to get some guys some minutes and playing time, and you know, get them some big time minutes to where they can play and contribute at the regional tournament. But so he's more than likely, I think it's already determined that Harrison and Robertson will be the 1-4 game of that district tournament. And then the 2-3 is going to be, you know, Nicholas and Pendleton. Pendleton got a big win over Nicholas last Friday, actually this past Friday. And it kind of had those two right there tied. And, you know, I guess whatever – it happens between Pendleton and Harrison on Friday. If Pendleton were to get a big win there, that would make them the 2. And if not, you know, maybe there's a coin flip for those two on 2-3, but there's really not much difference in the 2 and the 3 as we've come to find out, other than what color uniform you're wearing.
Yeah. If you feel superstitious and you play better in the whites compared to the darks, I don't know.
But you know, and
but yeah, that seemed like a heck of a game, you know, Friday night. And you know,
Alex Beist had a remarkable game for Pendleton County, scored 26. Aiden Merrill, who has just recently started starting for Pendleton County, you know, chipped in 15. They got some production from Kirsch in the middle. And but as always, you know, Nicholas County, the Hatton kid, the guard, made several shots from the perimeter, looked really well. Wyatt Clark is just as smooth as a player as you're going to find in the region. You know, he just – stuff seems so effortless from him at times, whether it be a pull-up jumper, whether it be a deep three. And like I mentioned to you earlier, he got a steal on the break and went up and dunked it two-handed. So, I mean, just a superior athlete. And, you know, Coach Wright's – I don't think he only loses maybe 1-2 seniors. I think only maybe one of them play. So not only is he going to get Preston Blake back next year, he's going to return most of his players. So, you know, along with Paris, Brossert, Nicholas, Bracken, Augusta, that's going to be a fun all-A tournament next year because they're all going to be competitive.
I mean, you think about the top teams, they all lose a lot. I mean, GRC loses basically their starting 5. Mason County loses, I think, 4 or 5 in their starting 5. Campbell's losing 3 or 4. I mean, there's a lot of turnover going to be happening.
And you know me.
I pose that question to me next, like, what's going to look like next year? I was like, I don't know. I mean, who's the favorite? I mean,
well, you know me. I'm a Class A guy. Pendleton County is the only school I've worked at that's not been Class A. nothing more would, you know, if Pendleton County can't win the region next year, nothing more would make my heart happy than to see about a list of four or five Class A schools up there near the top. And I think it's possible.
It's certainly possible.
Yeah. You know, I know Harrison County loses a little bit. They still return Caden Custard, but you know, you're just talking about teams and what they lose and what they return. I mean, but I'm going to tell you this, and it may take a couple of years, but Pendleton County's got a really strong eighth grade class that's been, I don't know if they've lost five games total in their middle school career.
I struggle to buy into that though, man, because I hear.
I'm just saying, I don't know how it translates, but
right.
I know on the girls' side, when I've had strong middle school teams, they've turned out to be strong high school teams. Maybe it's different on the boys' side, I'm not sure, but they're definitely got a really strong middle school class coming up, and you know, there's always kids at the middle school level that end up not playing at the high school level. So there's a lot of factors and things that go into that, but. Just speaking specifically for the 38th there, I was just, you know,
right.
But it's going to be Nicholas and, you know, Pendleton in the first round of the district. Like I said, the only thing left to be determined is who's going to wear white, who's going to wear dark. But Friday, Harrison will be at Pendleton. So with it being at Pendleton, who knows what could happen.
Right.
Yeah. And the district that you probably know more about than anybody, the 37th. I'm sure you've covered some of those games this week, and you got Scott, Brossard, Campbell, and Calvary. Of course, Campbell's already locked down the four or one, right? Calvary's locked down the four.
Yeah, those are locked in. 1-4, 2-3.
Okay. So, because they only seed one game,
Campbell,
right?
Calvary. Yeah, they just play one district game. You got Campbell Calvary, and then you've got Scott Brossard, you know, and I think that's the one that everybody will be keeping their eyes on and see who makes it out of it on that.
Bishop Brossard and Coach Franz and got on a little run there, won the All-A, and they had to battle it out with Nicholas in the first round and then, you know, battled out with Paris on their home floor in the championship game. And then it seems like since the All-A, they went downhill. You know, I think they've lost six in a row. And they go to Augusta tomorrow, and that's not going to be easy with Coach Henson. And, you know, playing at Augusta is never easy. And Brossard's a team I feel like, you know, that maybe have peaked a little early. And, you know, anytime you get a regional tournament, you're going to be without Scott or Brossard. You know, that's kind of a heavyweight not making the field, kind of like, you know, this year in the 40th. You know, right. Paris, Montgomery, GRC, there's three teams there, and even Bourbon, who has played well of late. You know, that's, you know, those are two tough districts, and it's always tough when you got four really good teams, but only two can advance.
Brossard and Scott have been really hard to figure out this year, but like you said, Brossard started off hot. They were, you know, 12-6 and have lost six in a row since. So, you know, did they, like you said, peak too early, or they were 12-4 and lost six in a row. So did they peak too early? Scott seemed like they were turning the corner, but then go down to Bourbon County and lose in overtime. So, you know, where are they? But
then right, because
Campbell to me is really starting to peak, because you look, they were up 10 on Covington Catholic in the fourth quarter and ended up losing in overtime to them on Tuesday. And then, you know, their only losses since the calendar turned 2023 are to Connor, lost to Mason County by four in a really tight one, lost to Boyd County in double overtime in a 110-107 game. And they've also lost to, you know, Holy Cross and Jacob Meyer and Covcast. So to me, they're playing really good basketball right now.
Yeah, because I know Mason, Cuff Calf, Holy Cross. They're all definitely top 25 teams in the state.
Right. Connor too.
You know. Connor too, yeah. And you know, what a lot of people don't realize, you know, another term I don't really like in coaching that you hear passed around a lot is moral victories. And people that look at that Cuff Calf Campbell County score, they're probably thinking, well, that's a moral victory for Coach Eric Russell and his Campbells. Yeah. But what they don't realize and understand is I think Campbell was up 12 at the half and up 10 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know, on your home floor, right?
Yeah, that's one that hurts for sure.
Yeah. And anybody that's been around basketball and has coached and, you know, realize that these moral victories aren't there's no such thing. In my opinion, there's no such thing. You know, you get that game at home, the way it shook out, Campbell County's got to pull out that win there. Then you watch everybody talk about how their confidence rises because Campbell just beat Cove Cath. So, you know, they got a shot to beat Clark. They got a shot to beat Mason, which I do. I think that anyhow.
Yeah.
I'm not ever going to discount Eric Russell and what he's done in the month of March in the 10th region.
Yeah, those three have really, to me, separated themselves in this region. And Harrison seems like they're knocking on that door, but they've got to show me something against one of those three to prove it. And, you know, Bracken on any given night, I think, will be a tough matchup for anyone. And then from there, I know I really struggled to rank 6 through, you know, 12 or 13 in the region this week. I really did.
Well, do you want to go through our rankings here?
Yeah, I think I'm first this week.
Are you? I thought you went first last week.
No, I don't even know anymore.
I don't either. I mean, it wouldn't be the Stay Hot podcast if we did the same thing every week.
True that. That is true.
And I dropped my ink pen I was using earlier, and who knows where it's at. I don't need it because I've already got them written down. But I actually went GRC 1, Mason 2, Campbell 3, Harrison 4, Bracken 5. I went Paris 6. I went Scott 7, Bishop Brossard 8. I went Bourbon 9. Then I went Montgomery County 10. I ranked all four 40th district teams right now with the way they're playing right now.
Yeah. No, we're close. Our top six were the same. You know, I didn't know if people would put Paris 6 or whatnot, but I did. You know, the way they're playing and, you know, the wins that they had on back-to-back nights over Montgomery and Bourbon, to me, put them there. I did put Montgomery 7, and then I put Bourbon 8. So our 40th and 37th are flip-flop. So I have Paris 6, Montgomery 7, Bourbon 8, and then I have Scott 9 and Brossard 10. So
I probably should have ranked Bourbon ahead of Scott. Because they beat them head-to-head. But
yeah.
I just, for some reason, I have stuck in my mind that now that Howe and Hunter are both healthy for Scott, that they're going to start playing better. And yeah, they have, but I think both of them played at Bourbon, and it didn't. They didn't win. So probably if I were to do that over, I did this earlier today, kind of, you know, jotting things down. And Bourbon County's probably earned that. You know, but just the way Brossard and Montgomery County and the directions are going, I just felt like I needed to drop them. And
That's why I had Brossard at 10. I think it justifies that with losing 6 in a row. That's tough. And, you know, 6 through 10, as it is to me, is kind of flip a coin. And
well, it just seems like to me, like on the girls' side and boys' side, you know, I was looking through the Ryhurst scoreboard, and it seemed like there was just some strange scores all week. You know, just
– I mean, technically, you can almost make an argument for Paris over Bracken, too, because they beat them.
Beat them head-to-head. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the thing, too. You know, I was – I don't – it just seems like there's been a lot of – and I think it makes for a great regional tournament. It makes for a great postseason, great district tournament when there's a lot of parity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know it's kind of hard to say parity in the 40th because of GRC and just the kind of, you know, season they've had being defending state champs and not really being contested in the district play. But between Montgomery, Bourbon, and Paris, I can see any of those three, you know. And yeah, and like Coach Ransom said earlier in his interview, if you get the right draw, you know, win that district and say you draw the runner up of the 38th or 39th, you know, Paris has already beat the potential runner up of the 39th. Both of them.
Well, they wouldn't play the runner up though. They'd be playing the district champ.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. That's true.
But I mean, like, you know, GRC would be on the other side of the bracket. So
that's a win right there.
Right. So you avoid them and you never know. I mean, you could have a GRC Mason semifinal, and you just never know when that happens. And it's happened the last couple of years. So
yeah, and I don't think the folks up there in Maysville want us to speak that one into existence. I don't think they want that. Any milestones this week?
Let's see.
I feel like I've seen one somewhere, and I wanted to remember it, but of course I didn't.
I'll have to look. Hold on. Give me a sec here. There's none that really stuck out. I know we had a few last week, but this week I honestly do not recall one. If we do, I'm sorry.
Well, I just want to tell the people out there, and we'll say it again. And if you know of someone who's reached a milestone and we haven't said it, or you can DM me, DM Evan. We're both on Twitter. DM the Stay Hot Podcast. It's on Twitter too. Let us know the milestones. More than happy to give out a shout, because ultimately our goal is to highlight our student athletes and give them as much recognition as they deserve. So anything, you have that we don't know, feel free to contact us and let us know so we can get the information out there. So, anything else this week, Evan? You got any questions for the coach's corner?
Yeah, man, always.
Do you write these down throughout the week, or do you think about them on the spot?
Some I'll write down. Some I just kind of think of, kind of on the spot. It just depends. But I'm stealing this one from 10thregion.com, was the question that they asked earlier. And
I answered it on there.
looks like you replied. I need to know your train of thought here, because
Well, first of all, I don't know everybody in the 10th region, if they played, didn't play. I'm sure most of the coaches in the 10th probably played on their high school team, but I'm not 100% sure how good all these players were.
I gotta ask the question first. Let the people know what the question is.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Among the 10th Region boys basketball head coaches, who would you want as your starting five in their prime, in parentheses?
I kind of went with
Derek Robinson's a no-brainer.
I went with Brian Kirk.
Yeah.
Brian Kirk was one of the best high school basketball players I'd seen at that time, because he didn't just score. He'd take a charge, he'd rebound. I think he probably averaged 10 point or 10 rebounds a game for a guard. Adam Reed was a phenomenal high school basketball player. Plus, he's one of my good friends that I grew up with, played against, and I feel like we both probably had a hand in making each other better. So I'm always going to choose him. And then I got to look, and I was a three guard oriented lineup, and I thought, well, I better find some size somewhere. So I went with my man T. Brooks. I know he played D1 at Murray State. And when you go into the Paris locker room over there, it shows you how many dunks all these people had in their high school career, and Coach Brooks is on that list, so I thought, okay, he gives me some size. And then I've heard a lot about Coach Russell and his playing days, but I went with John Bentley at Montgomery County,
Where'd he
because
play?
I think Coach Reed played against him at Hazard in the All-A State Tournament.
Oh, so Bentley played at Hazard?
I think so.
Okay. See, that was one I don't know enough about his playing days.
And that's the thing. I mean, I heard Josh Cook could fill it up. Coach Ransom could probably play. I don't know much about Coach Ellsburn or Coach Mitchell's playing days over in the 38th, but I think Tony Moore could play.
I was about to say, Tony Moore was a hooper, man. I think he ended
And
up getting inducted into the Ohio Dominican Hall of Fame, which is a D2 school. And
I'm telling you what, I played against Jason Henson. Jason Henson was one of those ones who didn't have to score a whole lot, but he'd D you up 92 feet.
yeah.
But I tell you what I would like to do. I'd like to organize a fundraiser of every region, put together a team of their coaches, and let's have a Sweet 16 tournament. We'll draw out regions, one, draw it out peels, 1 through 16, and we'll put the 10th, I'll put the 10th region coaching staff up against about anybody else.
Yeah, there's some studs in there for sure.
And I'm,
I agree with most of your five. I just
hey, and hey, Big O, Orlando Donaldson could play.
right. Yeah, I figured he would have been in there for sure. Because you went guard heavy, man.
Hey, it's a guard's game now, man. It's a guard's
Yeah.
game. Got to be
Yeah.
able to shoot that three ball.
They'll rebound it though too.
Well, I just figure if the game got close, I'd go 1-4 with Derrick Robinson and say, just go get a bucket, my man. Go get a bucket. There ain't nobody going to stop you. Dunk on them if you have to.
Yeah, and it looks like Stephen Pede, he went with Robinson, Bentley, Brooks, Donaldson, and Eric Russell. So
My goodness. He's got four fives on his team.
he went Twin Towers.
He went quadruple towers.
Was Terrence more of a big man?
I mean, how big is he?
I mean,
Six four, six five.
yeah. I guess I consider him more of like a slash forward type guy.
Well, I never saw him play. He's older than me. I was young. I was a young tot.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's tough to disagree with by any means.
I just think you could probably put together probably 20 lineups.
Yeah.
That's why I say, how cool would it be if you could organize a Sweet 16 of coaching staff teams from each region?
Well, then I'm thinking like just coaching staffs from each individual team, and it'd be
No,
tough
I'm
for me
talking
to
about
find.
head coaches only. Each region picks their 8 to 10 best.
Yeah.
Bring your defibrillators and your
Yeah.
inhaler. We'll have the emergency medical team on staff or on site.
I think it'd be fun to see coaching staffs too, because you got some that got some studs as assistants. So,
Well, yeah, it'd be hard to pass up Jordan Brangers and Coach Reed on a 2-on-2 over there.
yeah, their teammates might not see the ball, but
I can tell you what, Adam Reed will pass it.
yeah. Yeah, Adam was a nice player. I mean, I just by seeing numbers and what he
I'm
was able
telling you,
to
he was real nice.
do. Yeah, for sure. What else do I have? I had one other one. I even typed it up. Where is it at? What do you think about the overtime? You like the 4 minutes?
I've never really thought about it. I definitely don't want to play another 8 minute quarter.
Yeah, no, that'd be
I think we just need to get real crazy and make a sudden death.
yeah, or you do like do a 2 minute or a 1 minute or one possession each or something. I don't know.
Of like, how football at college, they start at the 20 or whatever. We can just give a team starts with the ball in the half court, you get a possession.
I
If
just
you
think
get
to
three,
me.
you get 3 points. And after that possession, the other team gets the ball. They got to get three to tie. Anything else, they lose.
To me, I think 4 is just, it seems a little too long. I don't know. It's a lot of time, but by that time, it's a war of attrition. You got guys fouling out or.
I thought you was honestly going to say that you thought 4 was too sure, not long enough.
God, no. Four's
You
plenty. I mean,
must
it's
be talking about
JV overtimes.
those JV games that go into. They're only 3 minutes though, because I think it's half of whatever
Yeah.
minute quarters you play.
Yeah.
All
Does
right,
strategy
man.
change much? Do you do much different when it gets to that OT? I mean,
As far as what?
just, game plan. I mean, are you still running what you want to run, or is it kind of a matter of get the ball in your best player's hands at that point?
Well, I think any coach will tell you that when it comes to, having the ball, every set you're trying to get the ball in your best players' hands and positions for them to be successful. With overtime, it's kind of strange because I think as a coach going into that overtime if you're the better team or not. If both teams are playing at their best, are you the better team? And if so, I think you want to try to get as many possessions as possible. If I go in that overtime, say for example, in the regional tournaments, I draw GRC in the first round and I get them in overtime, I'm
You're
going
trying
to
to
try to
hold the
want to limit
ball.
their possessions.
Yeah.
I don't, but then again, in girls basketball, sometimes when you do that, you end up turning it over anyhow, because that's not one area they're comfortable with is holding the ball. They like to get it and go.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a matter of coaching philosophy, what you feel on. I know you, Coach Ransom mentioned the shot clock, in girls basketball, I'm not so sure the shot clock's needed for the simple fact that there aren't many girls teams out there that can hold the ball for 35 seconds at a time. I know just with my team, very few times do we ever make more than three or four passes in the half court before we jack up a shot.
Yeah.
But in girls basketball, you want to get shots. Shots also equate to offensive rebounds and, makes or gives you an opportunity. You don't want to turn the ball over. And every team I've seen to coach on the girls' side, the more we held the ball, the more we tried to run an offense to run clock, the more we turned it over.
Yeah. I mean that shot clock debate's give or take. I see enough basketball to where it's not necessary. I was up here, a lot of those teams just, whew, man. But they've got, they got elite scorers that can go do that too.
I will say too, but I also believe that, you know, in the shot clock, if you're the type of team and you're the better team, you want a shot clock because you want more possessions.
Right.
But I think if you add a shot clock to the game, I think that hurts a lot of Class A teams' chances to play against bigger and better opponents.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I mean, to each their own.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
All right.
2 weeks to go.
I know. It seems like it flies by, but I enjoy doing it. So our numbers are still good. People still continue to listen. So as long as that happens, I'll continue to give up an hour or so on our Sunday night because I enjoy doing it. But to everybody out there, stay healthy, stay tuned, and stay hot.